The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of having a dog, said Gilbert. They had not had a dog at Ingleside since old Rex had been poisoned, but boys should have a dog, and the doctor decided he would get them one. But he was so busy that fall that he kept putting it off, and finally one November day, Jem arrived home from an afternoon spent with a school pal carrying a dog, a little yowler dog, with two black ears sticking cockily up. "Joe Reese gave it to me, Mother. His name is Jip. Hasn't he got the cutest tail? I can keep him, can't I, Mother?" "What kind of a dog is he, darling?" asked Anne dubiously.
I think he's lots of kinds," said Jem. "That makes him more interesting, don't you think, Mother? More exciting than if he was just one kind. Please, Mother."
"Oh, if your father says yes." Gilbert said yes, and Jem entered into his heritage. Everybody at Ingleside welcomed Jip into the family, except the shrimp, who expressed his opinion without circumlocution. Even Susan took a liking to him, and when she spun in the garret on rainy days, Jip, in his master's absence at school, stayed with her, gloriously hunting imaginary rats in dark corners and uttering a yelp of terror whenever his eagerness brought him too close to the little spinning wheel. It was never used. The Morgans had left it there when they moved out, and sat in its dark corner like a little bent old woman. Nobody could understand Jip's fear of it. He did not mind the big wheel at all, but sat quite close to it while Susan sent it whirling round with her wheel pin, and raced back and forward beside her as she paced the length of the garret, twirling the long thread of wool. Susan admitted that a dog could be real company, and thought his trick of lying on his back, waving his forepaws in the air when he wanted a bone, the cleverest ever. She was as angry as Jem when Bertie Shakespeare sneeringly remarked, "Call that a dog?" "We do call it a dog," said Susan with ominous calm. "Perhaps you would call it a hippopotamus." And Bertie had to go home that day without getting a piece of a wonderful concoction Susan called apple crunch pie and made regularly for the two boys and their pals. She was not around when Mac Reese asked, "Did the tide bring that in?" But Jem was able to stand up for his own dog. And when Nat Flagg said that Gypsy's legs were too long for his size, Jem retorted that a dog's legs had to be long enough to reach the ground. Natty was not over bright, and that floored him. November was stingy of its sunshine that year. Raw winds blew through the bare, silver-branched maple grove, and the hollow was almost constantly filled with mist. Not a gracious, eerie thing like a fog, but what Dad had called dank, dark, depressing, dripping, drizzly mist. The Ingleside Fry had to spend most of their playtime in the garret, but they made delightful friends of two partridges that came every evening to a certain huge old apple tree, and five of their gorgeous jays were still faithful, clucking impishly as they ate the food the children put out for them. Only they were greedy and selfish and kept all the other birds away. Winter set in with December, and it snowed ceaselessly for 3 weeks. The fields beyond Ingleside were unbroken silver pastures. Fence and gateposts wore tall white caps, windows whitened with fairy patterns, and Ingleside lights bloomed out through the dim, snowy twilights, welcoming all wanderers home. It seemed to Susan that there had never been so many winter babies as there were that year, and when she left the doctor's bite in the pantry for him, night after night, she darkly opined that it would be a miracle if he tufted out till spring. The ninth Drew baby, as if there weren't enough Drews in the world already. "I suppose Mrs. Drew will think it just the wonder we think Rilla, Susan." "You will have your joke, Mrs. Dr. Dear." But in the library or the big kitchen, the children planned out their summer playhouse in the hollow, while storms howled outside, or fluffy white clouds were blown over frosty stars. For blow it high or blow it low, there was always at Ingleside glowing fires, comfort, shelter from storm, odors of good cheer, beds for tired little creatures. Christmas came and went, undarkened this year by any shadow of Aunt Mary Maria. There were rabbit trails in the snow to follow, and great crested fields over which you raced with your shadows and glistening hills for coasting, and new skates to be tried out on the pond in the chill, rosy world of winter sunset, and always a yellow dog with black ears to run when you came home, to sleep at the foot of your bed when you slept and lie at your feet while you learned your spellings, to sit close to you at meals and give you occasional reminding nudges with his little paw. "Mother, dear one, I don't know how I lived before Jib came. He can talk, Mother. He can, really, with his eyes, you know." Then, tragedy. One day, Jib seemed a little dull. He would not eat, though Susan tempted him with the spare rib bone he loved. The next day, the Lowbridge vet was sent for and shook his head. It was hard to say. The dog might have found something poisonous in the woods. He might recover and he might not. The little dog lay very quietly, taking no notice of anyone except Jim. Almost to the last, he tried to wag his tail when Jim touched him. "Mother, dear ones, would it be wrong to pray for Jib?" "Of course not, dear. We can pray always for anything we love. But I am afraid. Jippy is a very sick little dog." "Mother, you don't think Jippy is going to die?" Jip died the next morning. It was the first time death had ever entered into Jim's world. No one of us ever forget the experience of watching something we love die, even if it is only a little dog. Nobody at Weeping Ingleside used that expression. Not even Susan, who wiped a very red nose and muttered, "I never took up with a dog before, and I never will again. It hurts too much." Susan was not acquainted with Kipling's poem on the folly of giving your heart to a dog to tear, but if she had been, she would, in spite of her contempt for poetry, have thought that for once a poet had uttered sense. Night was hard for poor Jim. Mother and father had to be away. Walter had cried himself to sleep, and he was alone, with not even a dog to talk to. The dear brown eyes that has always been lifted to him so trustingly were glazed in death. "Dear God," prayed Jim, "please look after my little dog who died today. You'll know him by the two black ears. Don't let him be lonesome for me." Jim buried his face in the bedspread to smother a sob. When he put out the light, the dark night would be looking through the window at him, and there would be no Jip. The cold winter morning would come, and there would be no Jip. Day would follow day for years and years, and there would be no Jip. He just couldn't bear it. Then a tender arm slipped around him, and he was held close in a warm embrace. Oh, there was love left yet in the world, even if Jippy had gone. "Mother, will it always be like this?" "Not always." Anne did not tell him he would soon forget, that before long Jippy would only be a dear memory. "Not always, little Jim. This will heal sometime, as your burned hand healed, though it hurt so much at first." "Dad said he would get me another dog. I don't have to have it, do I? I don't want another dog, Mother. Not ever." "I know, darling." Mother knew everything. Nobody had a mother like his. He wanted to do something for her, and all at once it came to him what he would do. He would get her one of those pearl necklaces in Mr. Flagg's store. He had heard her say once that she really would like to have a pearl necklace, and Dad had said, "When our ship comes in, I'll get you one, Anne girl." Ways and means must be considered. He had an allowance, but it was all needed for necessary things, and pearl necklaces were not among the items budgeted for. Besides, he wanted to earn the money for it himself. It would be really his gift then. Mother's birthday was in March, only 6 weeks away, and the necklace would cost 50 cents.